Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it's presented a Gaza ceasefire proposal to mediators with the aim of putting an end to the ongoing war. The Israeli regime commits a new massacre against Palestinians seeking aid in Gaza, drawing strong condemnations from resistance groups. And Russians are heading to the polls throughout the country in a three-day presidential election. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on Blue World News. And now Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says it's put forth a new proposal for a Gaza ceasefire with the aim of ending Israeli war on the besieged territory. A senior Hamas representative in Lebanon says the movement has presented the proposal to Egyptian and Qatari mediators, as well as the U.S. Osama Hamdan said proposal includes return of displaced Palestinians to their homes and providing them with aid. He says exchange of Palestinian prisoners with Israeli captives held in Gaza will be included as well. Reports say initial exchange will see the release of Israeli women, children, the elderly, and sick, and they'll be freed in return for the release of 700 to 1,000 Palestinians. The Israeli regime has said that new Hamas position is based on what it called unrealistic demands. Hamas has already said any Israeli opposition means the regime insists on continuation of this war. And now welcome everyone to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Condemnations continue pouring in over Israel's massacre of over 100 Palestinians waiting for humanitarian aid in Gaza City on Thursday. Now, the Palestinian Mujahideen movement says that Israel's shelling of aid seekers at the Kuwaiti roundabout is a stain of shame for anyone complicit in this crime. The resistance movement held U.S. and other Western states and some Arab countries responsible for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Another resistance movement, Hamas, reacted as well. It criticized failure of the international community and the UN to take action against Israel. Hamas said inaction has given the regime the green light to commit horrific crimes against Palestinians. Israel has time and again targeted aid seekers in Gaza in the past several weeks. The regime unleashed its war on Gaza back in early October, killing over 31,300 people, most of them women and children. Joining us now for the program is Habiba Jaghouri, a journalist and activist, joining us from Adelaide, and John Stepling, author and commentator, joining us out of Inderøy, Norway. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Habiba, we'll do the gentlemanly thing here and start with you. First, your initial thoughts. Who in what conflict provides denies a civilian population of food, water, and medicine, and the little that does get in, it targets them when they are desperately seeking to go after it?
Thank you so much for having me. Well, a regime that has started off being anti-human in politics from the very beginning of its foundation, that from the very beginning of its foundation started off as a lie, started off as an excuse to come and plunder and steal resources. Of course, something like this, some atrocious, absolutely horrific war crime of using starvation as a weapon of war and then killing people seeking aid, seeking food. Of course, such a result will come from Israel, a terrorist state. Israel has been a rogue state from the very beginning of its foundation. It has never, ever given importance to human life. And right now, in the month of Ramadan, when these innocent civilians, innocent people are taught to go seek aid and food, and then Israel comes and kills them, and then Israel comes and bombs UNRWA, which is an aid center, Israel kills UN officials, Israel kills journalists. Israel is a state that must be abolished. It is an entity that is cancerous to humanity, and there is no cooperating with this. There's no two-state solution. There's no peaceful coexistence with a people, with a state, with an army that does not care for human life, that does not care for the environment. It's absolutely shameful. The world all Western countries, the entire world, has a responsibility to condemn this and to take action against this war crime.
Thank you, Habiba. And John, welcome to the program. Now, John, you know very well, if there's a lorry, a big rig, an 18-wheeler somewhere in Ukraine carrying humanitarian aid, and it gets targeted, it'll be all over Western corporate media news. This is aid trucks getting in. One out of every 500 are getting in. And then when they do, you're not just hitting the truck. Sometimes you are, actually. The Israelis sometimes are hitting them en route on highways. But the worst part is hitting when people are scattered around them, resulting, and you very well know it's been done systematically, and it's not just on one incident now.
Well, what your other guest said is worth underscoring again. And yes, of course, there's a double standard that's a naked double standard in reporting on Israel and Gaza from Western media. It's shocking, actually. But your other guest is right. Israel has been a settler colonial imperial project from even before 1948. They were killing Arabs even before that. Ergun and the Stern Gang and so forth were terrorizing the region. You can go back and look up the bombing of the King David Hotel and on. The list of war crimes from committed by Israel is nearly endless. And it didn't just start during this most recent assault, October 7th. It's been going on for 75 years, and Western media has been complicit in hiding it and obscuring it and peddling pro-Israeli propaganda. There's so much evidence of this that it's impossible to deny. The Israeli state is kept alive by U.S. subsidizing. And the shipping of weapons and money, protection at the UN, and so forth. But Israel couldn't exist for a week without that protection from the United States. It's almost not a real country. It's a little settler garrison state as an extension of U.S. military dominance. And that's all it is, and it's run now almost entirely by fanatics, and perhaps it always was to some degree, but the settlers now are fanatical, sadistic war criminals. They cheer the starvation of children, they cheer the bombing of mosques and hospitals and relief workers, they lie. Everything that comes out of the mouth of Israeli representatives is a lie. They don't know anything except lying, apparently. And there needs to be not just a ceasefire, but an end to the occupation. No two-state solution. South Africa never had a two-state solution. It's ridiculous. No, you need an end to the Zionist project, an end to settler colonialism. It's long overdue, and some return of a normal life to the Palestinian people. They've been denied a normal life for 75 years.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe. To both of you, Habiba Jaguri joining us from Australia, and Mr. John Stepling there joining us out of Norway. And that brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. Now, the holy month of Ramadan is observed as a special and holy month for Muslims throughout the world, but the situation is different for Palestinians in Gaza, where they are living under catastrophic conditions due to the Israeli campaign of genocide. Let's take a listen to comments by some of the residents of Gaza.
We have been unstable, moving from one place to the next. There is no shelter or anything. There is no food, there is no water, nothing. Not even the most basic living essentials like bread. We're forced to eat wild plants when it rains and cook them. That is our situation. We hope from God to relieve this crisis and end this war soon.
I don't know. Look at my stomach, how shrunk it has become. I was 80 kilograms and now I'm around 65 kilos. I've lost 15 kilos. When you look at people, you see they talk to themselves. They can barely walk because of lack of food. There is no food or anything here at all.
Of course, despite the fact that we are under siege, starving, and despite the malnutrition that our dear children, patients, and elders are suffering from, we are still performing the Taraweeh prayers during the holy months of Ramadan. We ask Almighty God for a relief soon to our people in northern Gaza who are under siege from all sides.
U.S. and U.K. have conducted new airstrikes on Yemen as tensions remain high in West Asia over the Gaza war. Yemen's Al Masira TV said that Washington and London struck Hajja governorate three times on Friday. Hajja borders the Red Sea to the west. The crucial waterway has witnessed tensions over the recent months as the Israeli war on Gaza continues. The Yemeni armed forces have been attacking Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea to force the regime into stopping its genocide in Gaza. And in response, U.S. and U.K. have launched airstrikes on Yemen since mid-January for what they call protecting international shipping. Yemen rejects their claim and has retaliated by targeting American and British ships in the Red Sea. It holds the two Western states responsible for the mounting tensions and the genocide in Gaza. People throughout Russia are heading to polls to choose their new president for the next 6 years. Voting is to take place throughout the country's 11 time zones. More than 112 million people are eligible to cast their ballots from Friday through Sunday. Incumbent Vladimir Putin is running for a fifth term. He has three rivals, and they are from the New People's Party, the Liberal Democratic Party, and the Communist Party. Prior to the election, Putin called on Russians to vote, saying that people are the only source of power in his country. He said Russia is going through difficult times and needs to stay united and confident to overcome them. The vote is also taking place in four regions that Russia annexed from Ukraine in 2022, namely Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. Now, the conflict in Ukraine has led to a major restructuring of the global weapons market, according to a new report from a top NGO dedicated to peace. Now, Europe has doubled its arms imports in recent years, with Russia dropping from its longtime number two spot behind the U.S. Rami Mazahiri has your story out of Paris.
The top annual analysis of global arms sales found that France has risen to the number two weapons exporter in the world. The gains have often been made thanks to debt from Ukraine, which has become Europe's largest arms importer. French arms sales have soared 50% in recent years and now comprise 11% of the global market. The world's leading arms dealer is still the United States, which controls a record 42% of the global weapons trade. Arms sales to Ukraine has proven to be big business, and it may explain President Emmanuel Macron's about-face on the conflict. 2 years ago, Macron warned that Russia must not be humiliated, but he's recently become one of Europe's leading anti-Russia war hawks. France's top three arms clients are India, which is the world's largest arms importer, followed by Saudi Arabia and tiny but rich Qatar. Africa is still reeling from 40 tons of illegal free arms drops France made in 2011 to support anti-Gaddafi rebels in Libya. As predicted, the weapons soon found their way to Syria, the Central African Republic, Ukraine, and elsewhere. This week, French Parliament approved a 10-year military pact with Kiev, which guarantees billions in more weapons deliveries. Russia continues to gain ground against NATO-backed Ukraine, which is an important reminder that some weapons are made to work under actual wartime conditions, and some are made mainly for sales and profit. Robin Mazahiri, Paris.
Nigerian Muslims, like millions of others worldwide, are fasting throughout the holy month of Ramadan. However, rising costs of living in the countries cause significant challenges for many during this fasting period. Danjuma Abdullahi reports.
Ramadan, a sacred month in Islam, is a month to cultivate self-discipline, self-control, sacrifice, and empathy for those in need. Breaking of the fast in the evening, known as iftar, also fosters a sense of community and sharing as people come together to share a meal. Here in Nigeria, many Muslims are observing the month of Ramadan with fasting while grappling with the economic hardships plaguing the country. The Naira, Nigeria's currency, experienced a historic decline against the dollar in February this year, leading to a rampant inflation that has rendered life exceedingly difficult for many Nigerians. Many people experience hunger before bedtime, making fasting during Ramadan a formidable challenge. Experts assert that there exists a fundamental issue that requires urgent attention. Religious organizations like the Al-Habibiyya Islamic Society have established the food bank, where Muslims donate both money and food to support the less fortunate during Ramadan. Dedicated volunteers cook and package meals, ensuring that hundreds of impoverished fasting Muslims receive a warm meal for iftar in the evening. The Nigerian government has recognized the food challenge and has moved to address it. This is in addition to other critical measures. Beyond palliatives, experts say the Nigerian government must have the right mix of fiscal and monetary policies in order to get out of the economic situation. They say more than 60,000 hectares of farmland have been abandoned in northern Nigeria because of the banditry and kidnapping. The government needs to address the general insecurity in Nigeria. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learnt from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavenly duty. So the ulema, Muslim scholars, took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the fourth episode of Ramadan special series, we will explain Ayah 186 of Surah Al-Imran of the Noble Quran. The Ayah focuses mainly on the tradition of testing human beings by God. Please stay with us. ¶¶ The arrival of the blessed month of Ramadan is indeed the blowing of the breeze of Allah's mercy. This blessed month paves the way to go up and achieve success in spiritual fields. Stepping in the path of success is not easy. It needs relentless effort and hope in the goal. But to reach the goal, we have to sacrifice things. This world has been created in a way that reaching the summit is not feasible except through crises and troubles. A person who deems no value for stepping in this way or has left it in the course should not expect to reach the summit. It is unjust to put a person who has made effort for a long time and passed behind many crises in the same position as the one who has been sitting idly or he who has made less effort. This rule is true for societies too. A society should make effort to push behind crises and obstacles rather than sacking other societies and nations. The Western civilization has built its system through pillaging of resources and preserves of other nations. Sometimes the faithful think that mere belief is sufficient to attain success and bliss in this world and the hereafter. But it is the divine tradition to test individuals and societies with calamities and hardships. God tells the faithful in Ayah 186 of Surah Al-Imran of the Noble Quran, "You will surely be tested in your possessions and your souls, and you will surely hear from those who were given the book before you and from the polytheist much affront. But if you are patient and God-weary, that is indeed the steadiest of courses." This tradition of testing is practiced presently as it has always been. God also says in Ayah 214 of Surah Baqarah, "Do you purpose that you shall enter paradise, though there has not yet come to you the like of what befell those who went before you? Stress and distress befell them, and they were convulsed until the apostle and the faithful were with him and said, 'When will Allah's help come? Look, Allah's help is indeed near.'" Effort and success go side by side each other. Nothing is prepared for anyone freely. Reaching the summit of success means confronting and struggling challenges and barriers. An Islamic society constantly faces crises to grow and prosper. God's assistance will come in the heat of the crises if the faithful act properly. This will increase their belief in the unseen. In Ayahs 123 and 129 of Surah Al-Imran, God, in order to encourage Muslims to resist firmly in the Battle of Uhud, reminds them of the Battle of Badr as the first armed encounter of Muslims and disbelievers. God wants to show how He sent His help to the faithful in the middle of crises and to make their hearts firm and sure for the next crisis in the Battle of Uhud. He says, "And certainly Allah helped you at Badr when you were abased. So be wary of Allah so that you may give thanks when you, the Prophet, were saying to the faithful, 'Is it not enough for you that your Lord should aid you with 3,000 angels sent down? Yes, if you are steadfast and God-weary and they should come at you suddenly, your Lord will aid you with 5,000 marked angels. And Allah did not appoint it but as a good news for you and to reassure with it your hearts. And victory comes only from Allah, the Almighty, the All-Wise.'" Progress and success are gained step by step and through endeavor. To go to the upper steps, you need to have perseverance and persistence. It is not an easy job, especially in the face of unexpected problems and obstacles. So one should be steadfast and have hope in God's help rather than means and facilities. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the Islamic Republic of Iran started laboriously researching on the disease and, in spite of illegally and cruelly imposed sanctions, achieved astounding results. Consequently, the World Health Organization approved the country's effort, and the name of the Islamic Republic of Iran was put in the list of the producers of coronavirus vaccine. It is the habit of the Islamic Republic to pass through crises to make opportunities out of them, no matter the U.S. and Zionist-controlled media conceal the progresses and breakthroughs of the Iranian scientists and researchers. Take two persons who want to take the entrance exam of universities. One of them enjoys every facility, such as private teacher, additional courses and classes, extra books and materials, and so on. He gains the fifth rank in the exam. Another one gains the 50th rank without having any of the aforementioned facilities. Besides, he had to work for a livelihood. It is quite clear that the latter's ranking is more valuable than the former's. This is true for the Islamic Republic. The Islamic Republic of Iran has undergone different crises for 45 years. Some of these crises were enough to destroy any system and country. So, it is a miracle that this country and this system has not only survived through all crises and conspiracies, but has also made incredible progresses in a big variety of fields. Ramadan is the month of patience and resistance, and fasting is the symbol of a struggle against carnal and personal desires. Basically, patience has an unbreakable bond with fasting. Patience against hunger, thirst, sins, pressures, hardships, etc. exist in fasting. Oneself strongly invites him or her to carnal desires, eating and drinking. But a fasting person resists against all these invitations and trains the self to become powerful and firm. A man with a feeble willpower will lose control in the face of transient pleasures, while a man with a strong willpower will stand firmly against worldly pleasures and pleasures of flesh with the aim of reaching sublimity and perfection in human spirituality.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Holocaust on Palestinians in Gaza continues by the Zionist regime. There will be no ceasefire for the beginning of the month of Ramadan, and there seems to be no pressure on the Zionist regime. United States and its cohorts have not only given the Zionist entity the green light to continue its genocide, but these countries are complicit. Inflicting as much pain and suffering as possible seems to be the goal of the Zionists and their Western backers. We're going to take a look at what happened today and what has happened for the last 5.5 months on this program. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Harley Schlanger, spokesman, International Schiller Institute out of Germany. And John Phoenix, journalist and international relations expert out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Harley, let me start it off with you. Did you expect this genocide to still be going on 5.5 months later?
Well, I think anyone who's listened to Joe Biden can realize that whatever he says about being more humane and stopping the killing of civilians, it means nothing. Because if the United States wanted to stop the killing, they could very quickly by cutting off the money and cutting off the weapons and cutting off the diplomatic cover. So regardless of the fact that Biden said he wanted a ceasefire by Ramadan, that the U.S. is putting out these messages, Blinken travels there, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, all of them are saying that this is unacceptable. They know that that's not going to stop Netanyahu. And the problem is that the U.S. is giving, as you said, a green light to the Zionist regime, the Netanyahu regime, to slaughter Palestinians. Now, the other aspect of this is, what about Europe? What about the European allies, the NATO allies of the United States? There have been a few voices raised, but on the whole, the Europeans remain fully in the camp of Netanyahu. Obviously, many of them believe that the solution to the problem in the region is to drive the Palestinians out of Palestine. They won't say it, but that's what they're letting Netanyahu do. And so I'm not surprised that it's continued. I'm horrified that it is. My organization is working to do everything we can to build a movement to stop it. But so far, the Biden regime is totally committed to defending Netanyahu, despite his statements today on MSNBC that he's upset with Netanyahu.
Yeah, stay with me on that. I'm going to get to that a little bit later in the program. Now, John, did you expect that a ceasefire would be in place by the month of Ramadan?
Well, I believe that the issue of ceasefire before Ramadan, this was just lip service by the Biden. I believe that they know the Ramadan is starting tomorrow. And the Israelis, for several times, refused after meeting with the Qatari mediators and the Egyptian mediators. They refused any proposal proposed by Hamas, which is a simple proposal, is that the, well, obviously, Israel had to draw from Gaza. A ceasefire, you know, will be at the same time. And then the first week, they will start, obviously, going through exchange of prisoners. And then from there, they take it for second phase, which is the Israelis would have to be out of Gaza completely. Now, they rejected that. Okay, they, because they wanted to give the Palestinians a break in Ramadan, so after Ramadan they'll be ready to come back and slaughter them. Okay, they are refusing a premier ceasefire. They wanted a ceasefire only for Ramadan. This is not acceptable for the Palestinians.
Right.
So that's why the proposal of having a ceasefire before Ramadan or for Ramadan is fair.
Right. What about that, Harley? It's actually quite mind-boggling that it is proposed, and we saw it earlier. There is a temporary ceasefire. We have a pause, and then we get back to the genocide. I mean, it is so mind-boggling, so dystopian just to think about this being even a possibility that they were bringing this up.
Well, that just shows the hypocrisy. I mean, the idea that you're going to stop firing for a little bit of time to get the hostages back, then you're going to go back in and continue the mass murder. The fact that no one's calling that out shows you the extent to which the West has lost all semblance of morality. Now, I just was at a briefing this afternoon at the South African embassy in Berlin, and what they said is they're going to continue to go to the International Court of Justice with one complaint after another to try and get some motion on this. But you look at what this means, even if the International Court of Justice rules that this is genocide and it should stop, it goes to the United Nations. And the U.S. continues to veto even a ceasefire resolution at the U.N. So when the U.S. says they want a ceasefire, I ask, well, what's the evidence that they really do? There's no evidence that they do. Right. They're comfortable with the destruction of the Palestinian population. And, of course, this goes back to why it is that they supported Netanyahu's efforts to break apart the unity of the Palestinians, why Netanyahu for a period of time was funding Hamas, why the Israelis were so-called caught off guard on October 7th. This is what Israel has intended to do. The ethnic cleansing has not stopped from 1948 to the present.
Okay, well, John, from a military perspective, the Zionist regime really has not been successful in Gaza. Are you surprised at the way the Palestinian resistance has inflicted harm, though, on the Zionist military?
I didn't think so, because this is not the first war, actually. The only difference between this war and previous war, this is the genocide, where they now they change the tactic of attacking civilians, bombing schools and hospitals. They know if they went, obviously, for a one-to-one fight with Hamas, they will not really be able to succeed. They tried Hamas several times before, and they failed. The only difference now is they are not attacking Hamas per se. They are attacking the civilians and hospitals and the schools. You know, it is really a barbaric war, not a war, a barbaric genocide against the Palestinian civilians. So I'm not surprised that the Palestinians will fight to the last second, the last drop of blood to defend their own land.
Right, of course. Well, Harley, why is the U.S. playing this game as if it wants to help the Palestinians and get aid to them, but at the same time it doesn't actually stop the genocide and it actually helps with it?
Well, let me give you a slightly broader perspective where this fits, which is that we've just seen motion with the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, expanding to include a number of nations in the region, including the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Iran. Now, the importance of that is that the United States, the military-industrial complex that controls the United States, is trying to destroy the potential for a new financial system. And you see that in terms of the attacks on Russia, the attempt to destroy Russia, and now we see the attempt to create a wider regional war. For what purpose? To maintain the U.S. sole superpower status, with Israel as an enforcer agent of that. My view and our view is that Israel is being used as a tool by the Anglo-American networks to maintain the unipolar order. And so, and from that standpoint, Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, they don't care one bit for the murder of Palestinian children. We saw that with Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, who praised the killing of 500,000 Iraqi children by sanctions, saying that it was worth it to get rid of Saddam Hussein. So this is the bloodthirsty mentality of the clique that controls the government in the United States and the United Kingdom. And that's why they keep vetoing these resolutions, and they cry crocodile tears about the children who are dying as they give more weapons to the Israelis to kill them.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, John, U.S. President Joe Biden on American Network on Saturday said that there is a red line for the Israeli regime in Netanyahu. Later on in the same program, he said there is no red line for the regime. What do you make of this?
I mean, they have to keep in mind one thing, that the players here, the person who controls the whole scene, is not Joe Biden. It's the Zionist lobby in Washington. Obviously, Joe Biden throw this out as election year now, and he tried to distance himself from the genocide by saying, look, we're not going to allow the Israelis attacking Rafah. Well, nearly half of Gaza strip in the city of Rafah. They're still attacking Rafah, on the edges of Rafah. Yesterday they killed 30 people. What do you mean, it's okay to slaughter other people in Khan Yunis, Bereish camp, 8 refugee camps, they've been slaughtered daily and left to starve to death. Yet he's just worried about Rafah. You know, the issue of the aid, which is, as you mentioned earlier, you know, they are quick enough to bomb the Hodeida in Yemen, Hodeida airport. They can bomb anywhere, but they cannot drop aids to the Palestinians. You know, most of the aids was dropped by the Jordanians in the sea, where the Palestinians have to go to the sea to fish the aid, and the Zionist Navy there, killing them on the water. So it's really a hypocrisy of the Biden by actually saying, we have a red line. He cannot cross the red line in Rafah, but we don't have a red line because we cannot really abandon Israel. Well, he's sending daily supply of military equipment to Israel to kill Palestinians. So why is Rafah only? You know, nearly 780,000 Palestinians in Rafah. Why is Rafah only where there's 750,000 in the center of Gaza and in north of Gaza? They left there to starve to death.
Well, Harley, is the Zionist regime and the regime in Washington basically one and the same?
Well, let me take a step back and make a point that I think is important. The American people are starting to turn against this war. They're seeing the footage, the social media coverage, and we saw the results of even the Democratic Party rebelling against Biden in the Super Tuesday primaries. It's not enough, but it indicates that there are people in the United States who don't agree with this policy. And you see internationally, when the South Africans brought this motion to the International Court of Justice, 55 nations, including the Organization of Islamic Countries, the African Union, and others, testified against Israel, against the Zionists, as carrying out a genocide policy. So there's opposition to it, but not inside the U.S. military-industrial complex. They are totally tied in with the same banks and financial institutions that run Israel. And, you know, the question that some people have is the Zionist lobby running the United States. Well, the Zionist lobby is essentially the corporate cartels of banks and defense sector companies and others that want war. They don't care if it's in Ukraine or Israel. They've done their damnedest over the years to try and portray every Palestinian as a terrorist to justify the attack on Palestine. And so most Americans don't know the story of the colonial occupation of Palestine going back beyond 1948 to the whole Balfour Declaration and so on.
Right.
So as a result, the American people let Biden lie and let him get away with it, although, as I said, there is a resistance building to that.
Well, John, since the U.S. and Israeli policy seems to be so intertwined, excuse me, does it mean that both entities can't be charged with war crimes and genocide?
Well, yes, those who are aiding the genocide under the international law, they should be charged because they are part of the genocide. Yet, physically, they are not obviously involved. But we do also aware that there is some military involvement by the American Marines in the beginning. Those who listen to a lot of the locals in Khan Yunis, he was actually talking to some of the soldiers who did say we are from USA, spoke to them in English. So the United States cannot just, obviously, in the end say we have nothing to do with us. They're aiding the Zionist regime. They're supplying them with their weapons. And also, they're supplying them with all footages, which is telling them where is the movement of Hamas, if there is any movement. They have their own satellite there. So they are actually practically part of that genocide. But the problem is, whatever happened in the International Court or United Nations, there is no mechanism to force Israel or to punish Israel. You know, they are above the law. And when any as your guest said earlier, any time any resolution goes to the United States, it doesn't matter how many countries will vote for it, one vote, one veto, which is the United States, So that's what the three times so far they vetoed a ceasefire.
Right.
Just to stop the killing. It's not even involving the Israelis withdrawing from Gaza and go back to the 7th of October, obviously. They wanted actually to keep the slaughter by actually being an obstacle by stopping the slaughter of the civilians.
Well, Harley, do you think the U.S.'s proposed setup of a port off of Gaza is a ruse, as many analysts are saying, to basically empty Gaza of Palestinians and to take control of the Strip and its natural resources?
Well, I think that's a cruel hoax. The idea that you're going to put a pier out into the ocean and deliver some food. You know, the U.S. made a big deal out of dropping 38,000 meals ready to eat. 38,000 for 1.5 million starving people? You know, I think if it weren't so deadly, it would be people would be laughing at this. But I want to go back to this question of the complicity of the United States, because the Genocide Convention of 1947-48 said that supplying weapons and support to a nation committing genocide means the nation supplying the aid and the money and the weapons is also complicit. And so under international law, if there really was a rules-based order, which Blinken keeps talking about, the United States should be brought on charges of genocide along with Israel. And the fact that it hasn't been shows the extent to which nations are afraid to turn against the unipolar order. Because the U.S., look, there's the 7th Fleet, or the 6th Fleet is in the Mediterranean. The U.S. has proven its willingness to conduct killing in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Syria, with the support of the terrorists there. I think the problem is there's got to be a reaction in the United States and Europe. And it's important what you're doing to get the story out, because your news does get covered in the United States. They try to silence it, but the more the truth gets out, the more chance we have that we can turn this around.
Yeah, they definitely tried to silence this network many times. But go ahead, John, you want to say something?
Don't forget, in the beginning of the genocide, the USA sent their military ship bordering the Lebanese shores and sent, obviously, threatening messages through the Lebanese government to Hezbollah not to involve. Not only they are supplying weapons, they vetoing any resolution to condemn the Zionist entity in the United Nations. They physically, actually, and they are actually on the sea, telling Hezbollah, if you involve, we have to involve to protect Israel. So, as the gentleman just mentioned, aiding and financing is part of that. But as I said earlier, there is no mechanism to force United States or Israel. In 1979, the American bombed the harbor in Nicaragua. The international law obviously decided that the American under Reagan should rebuild the harbor. So we've been waiting 45 years now. Nothing happened. You need to have enforcement to make things happen, not only spending time condemning this and condemning that and nothing happened. Palestinians after South African complained to the court, they still killed. That war never stopped. Hospitals are still being bombed. Schools are being bombed. So there is no mechanism to stop that unless the Palestinians and the other neighboring resistance intensify their resistance to the Zionist entity. And then that will make a big difference. A little move by Yemen, you know, a little poor country, to make a big difference. Hezbollah keeping the north area of Russia busy. We need Iraq and Syria. The only way, counting on United States government, you know, is not going to make any difference.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on this spotlight. Harley Schenker out of Germany, spokesman for International Schiller Institute. John Phoenix out of London, journalist and international relations expert. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, hoping to see you right here next time. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Al-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi'a al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malawi.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawinuha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call, and the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Peace be upon the Imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. In this dialogue, which by the grace of Allah we have been covering for quite a few programs now, because the dialogue is quite lengthy, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was talking about compulsion, free will, their absoluteness, and how the reality is that this is a matter in between these two matters, and this is a bain al-amrain, as it is known in Arabic. This is what the actual situation is. It is neither absolute compulsion, neither is it absolute free will, but it's something that is in between the two. After talking about compulsion in a lengthy discussion and talking about free will in a lengthy discussion and refuting both of them via logical reasonings in the Holy Quran, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam then proves the concept of the matter between the two.